Yeah, so what we're talking about today is what I've called faith that overcomes. Now, we're going to be looking at the life of a man in the Bible called Nehemiah. And I'm just going to draw out a couple of points that I believe will really help us. And like I said, it's something that, you know, over the years, God has really used to speak to me about different situations, about how life is sometimes, and how we need to approach it, the mindset that we need to have. And when we have this mindset, it will take us through even the most challenging times. It will help us to really achieve the things that, one, God has put in our hearts to achieve, and us as well, whatever individual aspirations we have. So I've called it the faith that overcomes. Now we're looking at the story of this man called Nehemiah. Now Nehemiah was an ordinary man, and that's what makes this story so interesting. We'll begin to see how God can take a man who apparently is just a nobody, who has nothing, should I say, no special skill, nothing extraordinary about this chap. And he uses this man to change the destiny of a whole nation. And to the point that, you know, the Bible depicts the story of this man and how his life affected thousands and thousands of people. And it's the same thing for us. When we're praying this morning, a couple of the prayer points that we raised was about the fact that, look, God said in Zechariah 4:6 that it is not by power, neither is it by might, but is by God's Spirit. So as we begin to really realize that, we'll now begin to see that, look, hang on, I can live my life in such a way, and such way that it's so dependent on God that I overcome eventually, no matter what the circumstances. So that's the story. So we're going to be looking at this man and highlighting a number of things. So the first thing I want to read is this, Nehemiah chapter 1, verse 3. Well, I'll start from, Nehemiah chapter 1, I'll read from verse 1 to 3. It says, the words of Nehemiah, the son of Hechaliah, I'm reading from the King James Version. It says, it came to pass in the month of Chisli, in the 20th year, as I was in Shushan, the citadel, that Hananiah, one of my brethren, came with men from Judah, and I asked them concerning the Jews who had escaped, who had survived the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said to me, the survivors that are left from the captivity in the province are there in great distress and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem is also broken down, and the gates are burned with fire. So what happened is that over a number of years, all the people in Israel and Judah in that region, they were taken captive. You know, they were invaded by Nebuchadnezzar, like a king from another land. So he went into Israel, destroyed the whole place, took some people captive, and took them to Babylon. So over a period of time, some of the people that had been captured were allowed to go back to Jerusalem to rebuild their lives. But some of them, you know, stayed behind in the foreign kingdoms. So we have the story of this man called Nehemiah. Bible tells us that he was just a cupbearer. Actually, he had quite a privileged position in the palace of the king. Because the cupbearer in those days, I think, was really close to the king, and you would, anything they offered to the king, like food and all that, you would drink it first. Eat it first. if you said, ouch, this thing is killing me, and you drop dead, well, that's just part of your everyday job. You got what I mean? But that was the nasty part. But what that meant was that, you know, you enjoyed a very plush life. Maybe if the king was going in his limousine, leather seats and all that, you were in there with him. So really, you just had to pray every day that nobody tried to poison the king. And you'd be fine. So this man, in quote, was living a life that was fine. You know, he had all the benefits of, you know, staying in the palace and all that. So in himself, he was all right, so to speak. There was really nothing, he had no need, to be honest, in this circumstance. But something began to happen here. Someone came back and from the people that had returned to Jerusalem. And he asked them, how are my people doing? How are these people doing? And the guy gave him he painted a very bad picture. He said, man, they're in great distress. The walls of Jerusalem are broken down. These guys are just, it's just a bad thing. These God's people are really suffering. And he left it at that. Now, one thing began to happen to this man. The Bible tells us that if we go down further, I won't read it there. He said Nehemiah was so touched by what he heard that he began to fast automatically. He was so sad. He was so concerned about the people that he just said, look, nobody told him to. He just turned around and he began to pray to God that God, started praying for the people that God, these are your people in distress. Do something about it. Do you understand? So that's where he started from. Then if we read down, this man now, went to the king, said, look, he had prayed to God. He went to the king and told the king, I want to go back to Jerusalem to help my people, to build, help them build and all that. So that's kind of like the background to the story. But that's not really what I want to focus on. I just want to make some analogies in terms of what this man did and how it applies to our lives. Now, and I believe that it's something that applies to, that can apply to us as well as we do things in church, as, you know, we're here in Bristol, maybe it's your individual life or someone that you know. Now, the first thing is this. Anytime you and I want to do anything, anytime maybe God has called us to do something, or there's something in your mind that you want to do, maybe you want to, if I use it from a non-church perspective, you want to start a business, or you want to do something, or you want to achieve something. One thing that you have to do is this. One is to really sit down and identify and think through what you want to do. Now, if we look at the case of Nehemiah chapter 1, verse 2 and 3, he assessed the whole situation and he said, look, what do I really want to do in this particular perspective? So he took time to really think it through. I mean, there's another part in the Bible that says, we don't have to turn there. So what I'm just saying is that the first thing is that one, you really need to, and I really need to say, okay, this thing that I want to do, this burden that's on my mind, what do I really want to do about it? This career that I want to go into, what career do I want to go into? What do I really want from here? What's my aim? What's the real purpose of this thing that I'm about to do? Do you understand? What do I want to achieve from it? Do you understand? I mean, the Bible tells us in Matthew chapter 1, verse 21, talking about Jesus. It says, when Jesus came to the earth, one of his main things that God said he would do is Matthew chapter 1, verse 21. It says, she will give birth to a son and you are to give him the name Jesus because he will save his people from their sins. So all that Jesus did, one of the main reasons why he came was because he was coming to save us from our sins. So he had a clear objective of what he wanted to do, where he wanted to get to eventually. So Nehemiah knew what he wanted to do eventually, but he didn't know how it was going to pan out. And I'll explain why he probably didn't know. So Jesus knew that, look, I'm coming to the earth to save people from their sin. That's my number one goal in this matter. So it might be that, someone wants to go on, you want to do a particular career, or you're studying a course, you are in secondary school or something, and you're studying. What you want to put at the back of your mind is like, why am I doing what I'm doing? Why? Why am I coming to church? Why did we move to Bristol? Why are you in, Wales? Why do you want to do that job? What exactly do you want? So the first thing is establishing what it is you want to achieve, what it is specifically you want to achieve, and what God wants to achieve through you. That's the first thing. Now, the second thing as well is this. After this man, you know, really prayed and he understood what he wanted to do. He didn't know what he, how he was going to do it. He just said, okay, this is what I want to do. Now, it might seem like it's really ordinary. It's like, no problem. Then, you know, this man prayed a prayer and he asked the king for help. And he went to help to rebuild Jerusalem. But let's bear in mind that this guy was not in any leadership position at all. He wasn't a priest. He had had no training of how to lead people. He was going to help in the construction of the wall of Jerusalem. He was not an engineer at all. The Bible tells us that when they were building the Temple of Solomon, that they had, I mean, even David, the things he left to build the temple, they say he got gold from here, this from that. So David was an architectural planner. The people that designed it, Hoea and Bezalel in the wilderness, you know, and all that. This guy had none of that. None of that. He was just a random, let me not use that word random. He was an ordinary guy, no engineering training, no leadership training, no training, nothing at all. But you know what? He thought that through. So he identified what he wanted to do, the same way we need to identify what we want to do, you know, in whatever sphere as well. So the next thing was that he thought it through. He thought it through. The Bible tells us in Luke chapter 14, verse 28. Luke chapter 14, verse 28. Jesus was saying here that, Luke 14, 28. He says, suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Will he not first sit down and estimate the cost to see if he has enough to complete it? So that's the first one. So the other thing he did was he thought it through. Now, I want to take this from another perspective, apart from just the cost. You see, I believe that anything that anybody wants to do, one shouldn't do it half-heartedly. Half-heartedly. So that's what I want to bring out here. So Jesus was saying, look, whatever it is you want to do, you need to really, really consider it. The negative parts, the parts around, you know, but I guess the whole point here is that it's not whether you can, whether you have the resources to achieve it, in quote, but not to be half-hearted about it. Because I can tell you, if anybody is half-hearted about anything, as in, well, I'm just going to try it and see if it will work. You know, I can almost promise that person that they have like a 70-30 chance. And we'll see, we'll see the reason why. So this is before he even began to do anything at all. He sat down, he knew what he wanted to do, and he thought it through. He wasn't half-hearted. He wasn't saying, look, I'm just going to give it 6 months. Or I'm going to give it 10 days. If this thing doesn't work, I'll stop. I'll stop going to church. That person will really stop, I'm telling you. Or, you know what? This exam that I took that I failed, first time, second time, if I do it again, I fail, I'm not going to do it again. Get ready. Just get ready to stay there. I remember a long time ago, there was an exam I took in my early days of in IT. That exam was what I would call premium exam. I'm telling you. That exam was that if you could pass that exam and you put that qualification, I thought then, on your CV, I mean, you're like a king. You know, like a king. You know how you'd be walking around like this and say, they say, oh, good morning, Mr. Benson. You just say, oh, okay, okay. Hello, hello. You're like a king. And I tell you, that exam is one of the most brutal I've ever done. And what would happen in that exam is that, one, to start with, the pass mark was 75. So if you got 74.9, you failed. So what would happen in that exam, you would go to this place. It's a 9-to-5 exam, different parts. You would answer some questions and they will give you some things to program. They'll give you some code. They'll give you some code to do. 9-to-5. And at the end of the day, good luck to you. And I prepared for this exam. I read, I studied, I did everything I knew how to do. And the last thing was that the exam was very expensive. Very expensive. So I think, I don't know, we convinced the directors of the house to let us do the exam that time. You know, I'll pass, you know, and all that. You believe that I did that exam? When I got there and I saw the questions, I said, my goodness, these guys can't be serious. I said, these guys cannot be serious. How can they set this kind of exam? But, you know, I paid anyway. So I just had to just try my best. I did all I could. And I just, you know, prayed, God, you have said that you give me success. Whatever I lay my hands upon will prosper in Jesus' name. And I prayed, and the result came out, and I failed it. I got 59 or something like that. I was brokenhearted, I'm telling you. I said, this exam, I said, I'm okay, but I asked, okay, let me do it again. So this time around, I put it into gear two. I studied, you know, and all that, just because I was determined. I said, man, I must be a king in this industry so I can fluff around all those guys that call me and, you know, try and harass me. So I did that. And the next time, I studied and I called and I got 76 the next time. So I passed. So, but what I'm saying is that if I had been half-hearted about it, there's so many things you can do with money, I tell you. So this guy wasn't half-hearted. The reason I'm saying this is that I can tell you, I mean, personally, Dickiness and I, we've been through some tough situations, I tell you. If we had been half-hearted, if we had been half-hearted, I can tell you, we won't be here. We will not be here. I remember the times that, you know, it'd be like we needed some things to happen. And, you know, then, you know, we're quite young then, you know, two people in one room. Then I was quite interesting, you know, just trotting along on the streets of England. But one thing we knew was that for us, we were not half-hearted. Anything we wanted to do then, when the rubber hit the road, we'll just pray. We'll just say, we're there. You know, this is the situation. And we start praying. Amen. You know, all the prayers we know how to pray. Da, 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 da. Sometimes it will happen. Sometimes it will nearly happen. But at the end, it always happened. Do you understand? We're not half-hearted. This man was not half-hearted at all. So the first thing I just want to tell us is this. For anything that we want to do, I can tell you, the first thing, I think the first battle is not to be half-hearted about it. You see, I see a lot of people around just, you know, good people, and their approach to life is, oh, well, whatever will be, will be. Really? Is that how you want to live your life? Whatever will be, will be. No. Whatever will be, will be. Really? Is that how you want to live your life? So, you know, is that how you want to live your life? Whatever will be, will be. Really? I give it to you, 65, 70. Do you get what I mean? So, we want to be decisive in whatever it is we want to do, like this man was. So, he was. Now, the next thing that this man did in Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 7 onwards, he made a move. He didn't just, you know, you know, like, some, so for example, sometimes you're watching TV, right? And they bring, like, these adverts about people suffering in different countries, maybe Compassion or Water Aid, and, you know, you see people, they show you pictures of people suffering, and at that point you're, oh my, these people are really suffering, because you're seeing it on TV, you're touched and all that. And you know what happens? Oh, you're like, oh, I would really love to help these people. Once that channel goes, you just flip out your you guys are not letting me concentrate. Once that advert goes, you just flip out your big bowl of rice and chicken and pizza, and you've forgotten it. You just, you know, you wipe that tear and you just, sorry, I have to carry on my pizza and all that. No action whatsoever. You don't remember. You just, you know, touched at that time. You know, But after that program goes, you just hear beep, 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 the oven, the pizza you put in there. It's finished cooking. You need to grab before it burns. You see, this man didn't just say, these people are suffering. God help them. And just carry on sipping wine after for the king. No, he made a move. You know, it seems a bit funny, but so the same way, if one is there, you know, there's stuff you want to do, there's stuff God has asked you to do, you can dream all you want. You can do everything, you know, you can. If you don't make a move, nothing is going to happen. You have to make a move. Even though you don't understand all the circumstances around, you have to make a move. You must make a move. Otherwise, that person will be there day in, day out, day in, day out, day in, day out, no move, same place. So this man made a move. So that's the thing we say about this man. So we see that he identified what he wanted to do. He thought it through. He wasn't half-hearted about it. And he made a move. It is so important. I remember I remember someone who started a business 5 years ago. I won't mention their name. And, you know, through this, and, you know, and this person was like, I want to do this thing. I said, okay, no problem. Why don't you start? And this person started. I can tell you, you know, so much money was invested in the early days. They went all over to different countries. And, you know, can you imagine spending all that kind of money? You come back and, you know, you're thinking, yeah, I've hit it. My sales are going to blast through the ceiling. And in 1 year, you sell 2 or 3 items. You know, can you imagine how discouraging that is? Do you understand what I mean? But that person made a move. That's what's important. They could have said, well, I've had it. No, you can't have it. You need to make a move. Everybody needs to make a move. Sometimes you might say, that's my neighbor. I really want to talk to them. They must know Christ. Maybe you've come to church. Pastor Benson, I said, let's reach Bristol. Let's reach Wales. And you're like in the car, darling, that was good. I really want to reach the world. But you don't make a move. You're like watching that program on TV with compassion and you flipped your pizza afterwards. I mean, you need to make a move. It seems a bit funny, but you need to make a move. The next thing is this. And that's what I think I alluded to this a while ago. This man, he made a move, but he did not have the knowledge whatsoever. But one thing he had the ability. He had the ingredients for the job. Now, what do I mean by that? 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 3, King James Version, it says, God has given us everything that pertains to life and to godliness through the knowledge of him, or who called us by his own glory and goodness. What do I mean by that? Excuse me. Number 4, this man had the ability, the ingredients in him, but he did not know how he was going to do this. And it's quite interesting that I believe so strongly, and I'm now seeing that anything that God calls a man to do, or a woman, anything that you want to do that is so pressing that you want to, maybe when it's your career, you want to be a computer person, you want to be an, whatever it is you want to be, if that desire is so driving in you, you have the ability. Now, that is the ingredients, the basic components that's required for that thing that God has called you to do or that you want to achieve. But the only thing is that you might not have the knowledge. Do you understand? This man had no idea of, he had not led anybody before. He had not built anything before. And here he was going to help rebuild a whole country. It's just like me saying, you know, someone called, rings me up and says, can you come to Russia and help us rebuild our agricultural facility that will feed all the people in Europe. You know what my response that will be? I think you better call Dick Nesmuth. I'll be like, you know, call someone else. Why? Because I don't have the knowledge. But what if I'm called to do that? Then I have the ability. This man had the ability in him. He didn't. I mean, this guy's faith was so interesting. The same way, anything that you want to do, that I want to do, or that God has called us to do, we have the innate ability in us. We have it in there. There's a part in the Bible, Proverbs chapter 3, verse 19 and 20. Proverbs chapter 3, 19 and 20. Now, in Proverbs chapter 3, 19 and 20, it begins to say something there. It says, by wisdom, the Lord laid the earth's foundations. By understanding, he set the heavens in place. By his knowledge, the deeps were divided, and the clouds let the drop dew. So this is saying something here, that God established the earth's foundations by understanding the heavens and the knowledge and understanding. So what I'm just saying is that even though one has the ability to do something, So even though you have the ability, you might not even know you have the ability because you don't have the knowledge at that point in time. But this man had the ingredients concerning what God had called him to do. And these ingredients in him, in his own instance, was he had the character. He had character, he had perseverance, and he was a faithful guy in all God had called him to do. Do you understand what I mean? So in his own circumstance, those were the ingredients that he needed. He had the basic fundamental ingredients. And as he went along, people came and joined him who had more knowledge in the areas. And he just went and did that. Do you get what I mean? So we see here, number four, again, applying it to our lives. So there are things that we want to do and we think, well, I'm not really qualified to do this thing. No problem. If God has called you to do that, then what that means and what we need to believe is 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 3, that God has given every single one of us what we need for life. Life is everything we do on a daily basis. And what we need for godliness, that's the things that God has called you to do. So it might be that really God has called you to be a prophet, apostle, evangelist. Inside of you, you have all the components. And you might begin to even see some of the symptoms of being a prophet or one of those things. But it might just be that you don't have the knowledge at that time to bring out that thing. It's just like, for example, Prince Harry. And what's his brother? And Williams. You know that when those guys were born, not because of anything that they had done, they were born into the royal family. So they had royalty in them. But I can tell you, when Prince Harry and William, when they were growing up, I'm sure they'll be, you know, they must have splattered full of all over the table. I'm sure they might have been running in the garden with their, you know, nappies, shouting, da, 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 future prince. So. Do you understand? So they had royalty in them because they were born into that family. But knowledge, they didn't have it because obviously they were young. Do you understand? So the same thing, for everything that God has called anyone to do, I am telling you, you have the ability to do it. Knowledge, you might not have at that point in time. So this man had the ability, and as he went along the way, he got the knowledge as well. All right. So we said he identified what he wanted to do. He was not half-hearted about it. He made a move. And he had God's ability, as we saw. Now, the other things that we want to now see is this. And I think we'll close in about 10 or so minutes. So that's the first part. Now, this is where the rubber hits the road a lot of the times. And I believe that in a lot of situations, these are the same things that we face. And I believe that as we begin to really understand how to address the situations, then we won't be so disturbed. I'm telling you, we won't be so disturbed. Now, the first thing is this. Nehemiah chapter 4, verse 1. When this guy stepped out, Nehemiah chapter 4, verse 1, a couple of things began to happen. He said, but it so happened that when Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, that he was furious and very indignant and mocked the Jews. He ridiculed the Jews. You see, one thing will happen, right, or could happen when you are doing what you want to do or that God calls you to do. You will face, or one can face something called, what I'll call it, well, people might not ridicule you up front, but you face something called shame. Do you know what that is? Now, shame is this, and even Jesus faced it himself. Shame is this. You're like, okay, let's say plant a church, say, for example. And, you know, you might get asked the question, okay, no problem. Have you planted a church before? You say, no. The next thing is that, okay, no problem. You've been in Bristol and all that. You go to this meeting where there are other pastors sometimes or other people, and they ask you, so you guys there now. So how many are you guys there now? I'm sure by now you've been moving and shaking wherever you are. And your mind is like, hey, this bro knew that. Just. And, you know, the tendency is that you're like, you might feel ashamed. You might be like, oh, man, maybe I'm not really. You know, there was one time when we started coming to Bristol, and it was just a deaconess and I and these two young people here. And, you know, we'd come and we'll do service. You know, at one point, I was praying and I said, God, you know, I don't really need this stuff. Do you understand? I said, look, I don't really need it. I'm fine. All those people in Bristol, why can't you just let somebody else sort them out? Someone that is there, already. Let me be in London, cool. I mean, I'll just go to work, come back, you know, go to the headquarters. Choir is there, everybody's there. They'll just be saying, good morning, Pastor, good morning, Pastor. I'll go and sit down, you know, cross my leg, give my offering. After that, carry my family on the way. We might stop at grab some pizza on the road, have lunch on a Sunday afternoon, and be cool. I don't really need all this stuff. I mean, shame. And you know why that is? That's because you're like, my goodness, how about if this thing doesn't work? What will people say? People will say, look at them. You know, the same thing for you and I. You start your business, and you like, I'm not going to go to work again. I want to really focus on my business now. And people ask you, so how many have you sold since you left your job that was paying so much in a year? And they're expecting that, I'll have been selling. And you tell them, 3. not 3. 3.5 because I didn't sell on the other one. Or it might be that you're on a career or you're trying to change careers. And you know, you're like, I really want to change this career thing. And they're like, hang on, but the one you were doing before, at least is paying your rent, it's doing this. Why don't you just stick with what you know? One bed in the bush kills two, or something funny. You know, stick to it, be safe, man. Don't all this career change. It's not time. I mean, at least this pays your rent anyway. Why do you want to risk yourself? And you start going on the stuff. Then maybe you're not. You don't get the job as quickly as you want. Then people, and your mates I used to work with, I just got this other job away. You know, he's managing, they pay me slightly more now. How about you? Oh, I'm still on it. Oh, really? Okay. 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 Oh, see you later. You better. Why am I saying this? I remember when, you know, my wife and I left Nigeria, and my parents were so annoyed with us because, I mean, I said, where are you going? I said, well, I'm going to England. Do you have money? No. So in their mind, which was fair, it was like, how can you leave your job? Because I was working with my uncle then, you know, priming me up. And this guy loved my father so much because, you know, I'd done one of my professional exams. You know, I was, you know, my wife got a good job, one of the best jobs in the country then for her age, because she was a lawyer. She got one of the best, in fact, she even earned, she, I think her salary was about one, almost twice mine. So it was like everything was cool. I mean, that, those days, we'd just be cruising around, me and her in the moonlight. We just got married. I'm telling you, we just got married. We go to different restaurants. You know, we just, oh, dear, what do you want to do today? You know, I mean, everything was cool. We had a free house. I didn't pay rent. We didn't ever pay any rent. You know, free house, free car, nothing. You know, all we're just doing was spending and being cool, doing, you know, oh, all over. And we now made the move. I'm telling you, once we made the move and we came over, it was lack galore. There was a time that for 2 weeks, we didn't even have food to eat. We're eating this grain thing from West Africa called gari for 2 weeks. Nothing, you know? So what I'm saying is, I was now thinking in my mind in those days that we can't go back to Nigeria now because one, what will I tell after, you know, all that? They'll be like, oh, that's it. Is that all you can show for, you know, after all that thing, is that all you can show for it? Is that all it is? Really? Do you understand what I mean? Shame, the fear of shame. So whenever we think about that, it's like, oh, I better just back down. I better not, let me just, you know, be cool. Or, you know, no, don't be cool. Don't be cool. The Bible tells us, let's look at Hebrews chapter 12, verse 2. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 2. You see, I'm just highlighting these things because they're things that we need to address. It says, let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and the perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Jesus faced it. So what this is saying is that, one, this guy's mocked Nehemiah. They laughed. They said, you, okay, let's be serious here. Do you know anything about engineering? No. Do you know anything about leadership? Have you ever even led? No.
You're kidding.
You must be kidding me. And you want to build this wall? Scorn. He might have said in his mind, ah, let me just cool down and just, oh, okay. Let me just quickly go back to the king and say, I made a mistake. No, he didn't do that. He didn't. He faced it head on. And he told them, no problem. But one thing he did, he said, my God will see me through this. That was his response. So shame, be ready for shame or the fear of shame. We all go through it sometimes, you know? But it's irrelevant if you fix your eyes on the end. The end is that for us as a church, God will establish us in Bristol. Souls will be saved through us. For the people who want to be IT, whatever, you know, God will establish you. For the people who want to start businesses, God will establish you. For people who are studying, that is the end. So forget about shame. It comes. But we respond to it that way. Now, the other thing I wanted to mention is, I'll mention a couple of things, then we'll close soon. The other one was Nehemiah chapter 1, verse 3. And this is what I call circumstantial evidence. After this, I'll mention one or two, then we'll close. Circumstantial evidence. So circumstantial evidence is one of the challenges that everybody faces. Now, in Nehemiah 1, 3, this guy described a very grim circumstance to him. He says, look, those guys that survived the exile are back in the problems. in great trouble and disgrace. In great trouble and disgrace. The walls are broken down. The gates have been burned with fire. Circumstantial evidence. So what that means is this. Remember, the topic is the faith that overcomes. The circumstances that this guy was looking at was not encouraging at all. It was so extreme. It was like he looked around and this was what he saw. People in great trouble and disgrace. Just that. Everything broken down. This is enough to just send anybody packing, but not this man. Now, why didn't he go packing? Because if you read consistently, he was always turning back to God, reminding himself that, look, this is what God said. This is what God said. God said that whatever I laid my hands upon, I'll prosper. If I have a desire, Proverbs, it shall not be cut off. Do you get what I mean? These are the things that he began, he was always turning to God. He didn't say, you people stop laughing at me. You will see. Okay. Do you know that? Let's even put things apart. Do you know that I'm a very good singer? I can sing very well. Even if I'm not a good architect, I can sing. That's a skill I have. Tell me what you have. No, you know you didn't sing. Excuse me. Do you know that I'm. He didn't say all that, you know. He just said, God will sort me out. Do you understand? That was his response all the time. That was his response. Now, there's a part in Romans chapter 4, verse 17. Romans chapter 4, verse 17. And Romans 4, 17, the Bible begins to tell us something about how do you overcome these kind of circumstances? Do you deny it? Do you say, I'm going to confess that? That red bill that's come in through my door, it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. You will know if it exists when they come knocking. Or the fake. No, it's not saying deny that exam that I failed. I didn't really fail it. You failed it, bro, sis. Just prepare and do it again. You know, or or, you know, how do you overcome this circumstantial thing? You look all around you and everything around you says it's not going to work. Every single thing, and there are facts to prove it, that it's not going to work. Just pack it up. How do you handle that? I'll tell you. Romans chapter 4 verse 17. It says, as it is written, I have made you a father of many nations. This is God. He says, he is our father. Okay. He is our father in the sight of God, in whom he believed. The God that gives life to the dead and calls things that are not as though they were. That's the part I want to focus on, and we'll pray. God told Abraham that, look, I have made you this. And everything around Abraham then was the exact opposite. He had no reason factually to believe that what God had told him would happen. No circumstance. All the circumstances around him was pointing in the opposite direction. Do you understand what I mean? But there's something that we need to know about God. I tell you. It says he's the one that calls those things that are not as though they were. What that means, whatever God has called you to do, whatever you want to achieve through God, you need to, and I need to, really ignore all the opposing circumstances. We need to have faith in God. I'm telling you. We need to have faith in God. So what am I saying here? This man, there are some other things that he went through, but I won't go through those today. This man went through this, and at the end, the Bible tells us in Nehemiah, he achieved what God did, what God wanted him to do. And people realized something about this man at the end. They knew that looking at Nehemiah, forget it. God is the one that has had to have done this through him. There's no way this chap could have done it. It has to be God. That brings me back to the scripture that we were referring to this morning when we're praying. And that scripture was in Zechariah 4:6. It says, not by might, not by power, but by my spirit, says the Lord Almighty. So what am I saying today? The spirit, the faith that overcomes, the faith that will see you and I through, the faith that will see this church through, is this faith that overcomes. It is this faith that says, not by power, not looking at ourselves, not looking at our ability, not looking at what we can do in ourselves, but looking at Romans and looking at God and saying that God is the one that calls those things that are not as though they are. And I believe that as we begin to have this mindset, as we begin to have this attitude in ourselves, no matter where we find ourselves now or in the future, we can be rest assured that as we bear all these things in mind, we will have victory all the time, eventually. All the time, eventually. Do you understand what I mean? As we realize that, let's stand up and pray.